Rise and shine, WBOK. It's time for the best morning show in the Big Easy. The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas and the Early Bird is here to wake your mind up. No rooster needed. So get out of bed, take a stretch, and turn your radio up. The Good Morning Show starts now.
Wake up, New Orleans. Absolutely, man. 6:39 a.m. in the morning on Monday, October the 16th, the year of our Lord, 2017. Hey, man, connect back to the cross. If there's a short on your wire, get an expert to fix it. And congratulations to all you ain'ts, Saints fans. The Saints won. LSU won. Tulane didn't when they were supposed to win. So,
They won big last week,
and they couldn't do it. The wave got rolled. The wave got waved. Congratulations to everybody who voted and those who didn't. I don't want to hear nothing from you. No complaining. You know, that doesn't mean you can't get involved, but don't talk about elected officials if you didn't vote. But in the studio with us this morning, man, we're going to spend this time analyzing and talking about the election, making people think. MrThink504.com, Jeff Thomas, welcome.
Thank you, Oliver. Good morning, New Orleans.
And then it's such a, I mean, after you, the two experts, Dr. Clark and Dr. Amity, political science professors from UNO, SUNO and Dillard,
are
going to be
sure.
in with us. Of course, Dr. Chervenick later in the week. So we got a great week lined up. And on Wednesday, Judge Terry Love and breast cancer survivors and sentencing reform with former Judge Graham Bosworth at 8 o'clock on Wednesday. Thursday, John Slade, up-to-date returns back to the Good Morning Show. Friday, Simone Levine, Court Watch NOLA, and Veronica Barr, program director. And on Friday, Camille Harrell, the nurses with the National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and Natalie Robottom will be with us on Friday. But, man, let's get – some was expected, some things unexpected.
Right.
Jeff, when you take a look at this election, you know, what as you analyze the results of who won, who didn't won, what were any surprises to you?
I think the most surprising factor for me was the crossover vote that white voters got when you had qualified and competent black voters in the race. That shocked me and surprised me. You know, specifically I'm talking about
that was the first thing I thought about all through the election that and over here it was that qualifying the fact that even in the midst of all this racial turmoil we have in our country right now, police brutality, Confederate symbols and monuments, the willingness of African Americans to, even when there was a qualified black candidate, to choose someone who was not African American.
Sure.
And but also on the other side, as I analyzed many of the white precincts, how the inability of white voters
that's the other side of the coin, to go for
an African-American, even if they were qualified.
That's the other side of the coin, and that is exactly right. And that is the fact that white voters are eschewing, I mean, totally disregarding black.
They're voting race.
They're voting race 100%, and blacks are voting other factors. And so, you know, incumbency and I think a big part of what we saw also, another factor is that incumbents, the public is holding incumbents to a higher standard now. Incumbents need to be doing things. And listen, some of the people who lost it, particularly I'll talk about it in the West Bank, Nadine Ramsey is a friend, and it pained me to see her go down. But part of the referendum, I think, is that you have to be out in the community and you have to get your message out, and people have to believe and have the perception
the
that you're doing things.
You.
Yeah. Exactly right. That people have to believe that you're getting things done in the district. And so I think if you don't have that perception, and I think it's true
James
in New Orleans
Grace,
East.
64% of the people in New Orleans East said no to him.
Exactly. I think it's true in New Orleans East. I think it's
and
true.
And he was predicting outright victory. I don't know why, because we – so what is it about these incumbents? And many of them, when I talked to them, their comments was that they have no problem. They're comfortable. And we have said for months – and analyze this as election.
We talked about it.
We said that they had problems.
That's right. We talked about it early on a few months ago.
But why was it that they didn't believe they had problems?
You know, I think you get insulated. I think you're in the office. You're in this ivory tower.
You have people.
Yeah, you have people coming to tell you you're doing a great job. When you have a complaint, you think you handle it, and so you think you're taking care of everybody. But the fact is, if you're not out in the community, if people mm-hmm. don't have the perception, you could be doing great things. You could have a great story to tell. But if two things about incumbency, you have to do things for the constituents, and you have to get the message out to you.
Let's walk down the districts first. Joe Geruso is predicted. Eileen McClansky was borderline making and not making in runoff.
Right.
Every poll I saw for the last couple of months.
Every district.
He won handily.
Won every precinct in the district.
Surprisingly, though, Toya Kendrick Washington finished third.
Yes.
And I think for her, a newcomer, someone very little money, man, she has risen herself to the status. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the African-American mm-hmm. representative in District mm-hmm. A.
Yeah, she got 8.5% of the vote, 1,500 votes. And she didn't have a big budget.
At all.
And so I think it was a good showing on her part.
Yes.
And in a district that is majority white, the odds were against us, particularly given the fact that we already talked about the how white people.
But she represented herself well.
But she did well. I thought she was a great candidate. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm looking for great things in the future.
Yeah, the future bodes well for her. So hopefully her and Geruso can put together a coalition and work together. But kudos to her. Congratulations to Geruso.
Yeah, and listen, his win was astounding. When I tell you he won every precinct in the district, some by wide margins. It was a complete
But it also shows the populism and popularity.
Names.
The name McClansky, by everyone's account, was one of the more qualified.
Sure.
Smarter candidates running for any office.
Right. And Joe Geruso.
But he handled himself well.
He was a great candidate. I saw him out on the stump, and he interacted well with the public.
He has that political rhythm.
He does. And, you know, he's got a name.
And he got the pedigree.
Right, exactly right. So it's not surprising that he won. It is surprising that he won so big in my mind.
District B, Seth Bloom, Jay Banks, Tim Ray.
This is one that we're talking about where it's breaking down on racial lines. And
totally.
But it's sad in this case. We have Seth Bloom, who is an acknowledged drug abuser.
Heroin. Just even if he's in recovery, he's fresh into recovery.
Right, exactly right. And I know that other candidates. White voters didn't care at all. And so that gives me pause. It gives me pause when we have, again, we had qualified black
white voters seem to care when African Americans are embroiled in some type of controversy or trouble, though.
Right, exactly right. We are quick to go the other way, to go in a different direction. Right. And in that race, I think part of it was also race, that you had three black candidates and one white candidate. So the fact that white people are voting race only made it difficult for any one black candidate to galvanize the entire black community.
Let's continue to talk about that district a minute, though. It's pretty much 47-47 mm-hmm. With other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much tied. So mm-hmm. not only is the district evenly split, but if white voters are block voting in that district, if white voters are not willing to cross over in District B, mm-hmm. it's going to the African American candidate Jay Banks is going to have a very difficult time.
Well, I tell you, there was a candidate Tim Ray who did get some white support.
He did well with very little funds.
Right, he ran a great campaign. He was.
But is that vote going to go to Jay Banks?
Well, we don't know. Right, and that's mm-hmm. going to be the question. I think that District B has a. If there is a progressive white element in the city, if there are white people mm-hmm. who can vote for a black person, mm-hmm. it's going to be in District B. Those people are progressive, more liberal, democratic whites, as opposed to other parts of town where we have more conservative whites.
504-260-9265, your take on the election. I'm here with Mr. Think, 504.com, mm-hmm. Jeff Thomas. But it was interesting. I guess you have to give Mr. Bloom some credit. He got ahead.
Listen,
He got ahead of the addiction issue.
He ran a great race.
It seems like it was to his credit to go out there with it first and say, hey, look.
And it's timely. Listen, this is we had a conversation about this a few months ago when we talked about the difference in the treatment of drug problems in the black community versus the white community. When crack was an issue, we jail people. When it's heroin, it's an issue, we have treatment centers. And so when white people are on drugs, we have treatment. When black people are on drugs, we do jail.
Well, the 60 Minutes report last night, which said that the DEA and Congress and mm-hmm. the Department of Justice was behind allowing the pharmaceutical companies to proliferate America opioids. With opioids and with the heroin additives.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be interesting. I think that Tim Ray, when you talk about whether endorsements matter.
His endorsement is going to
matter. Tim Ray with him and maybe even Dr. Love, even though she didn't do well.
Yeah.
I think that his support is going to have some meaning in that district.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I think he is going to be the lever that tilts the scale. He's going to be the person that determines who wins, assuming that everything else remains consistent. I think Tim Ray's endorsement is going to be the determining factor in
District C.
District
C was interesting in that Christian Palmer,
former council person,
who folks suspected probably wouldn't win re-election because that district is tough anyway. Mm-hmm. She had some issues. Mm-hmm. Won election over an incumbent who beat Jackie Clarkson the last time, but she held her own in the African American community.
Yeah, well, right. Ms. Palmer actually got about 25% of the black vote.
25, a little better. Yeah.
Right. And so couple that with Nadine Ramsey getting less than 5% of white vote. Got wiped out in the white community. Therein lies the 112 votes that came up short.
Jeff, the funny thing is I was talking to someone about that election. And only 100-something votes, and they said, no, that's a landslide in that district.
Yeah, right.
Because Troy Carter 13, won, 26, right. Right. 18.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So,
right.
I mean,
yeah, that is.
Christian Palmer got a mandate.
That's right. She really did. She really did.
We're going to go to the lines right now. Callers are on. Line 1, Oyella, you're on with me and Mr. Think 504.
Good morning, Oliver.
Good morning. God bless you, man.
Mr. 504. Good morning, Early Bird and Dr. BOK at audience.
What's up, Yella?
First of all, I owe you an apology. You said that the councilman at large race was going to be a wipeout, and you were correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that you were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So let me get straight to the punch. And that, first of all, white folks stick together no matter what. They vote race. And you found that out the hard way yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. Black folks in general, case in point. A qualified candidate in Nadine Ramsey lost by 100 and some odd votes.
Landslide.
Lost by 100 and some odd votes. Mm-hmm. What if the black folks would have went out there and voted for her? All those white folks shouldn't have this.
Well, Yella, let me just interject one thing. The fact is, there was a black contingent of voters who were against Nadine Ramsey.
First of all, Women on the Move, they're probably one of, if not the premier political organization in the city right now, what they did with Paula Brown, what they've done with lesser candidates, what they did you haven't heard of Women on the Move before, but Women on the Move, probably one of the premier political organizations in our city right now. And this is a group of elderly, seasoned women.
Who turn in our votes.
Who turn out votes.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with black folks. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't want to dwell on that.
Okay.
There's a lot to talk about real fast, but I thought that was horrible. Thing number two, on this Seth Bloom character, he's a heroin addict. Mm. On all the shows on Saturday in the coroner's race, and I'm going to get, they mention every time they open their mouth on Dr. McKenna, and they ended it with, he had a federal tax evasion.
Mm-hmm.
Every chance they get on every the time. Shows on Saturday night and on Sunday. And nothing was mentioned about this Bloom guy. Nothing was mentioned about the heroin or anything.
On
the local media and the newspapers, nothing was said.
Yella, thank you, man. But I think that's just the world we live in. And I think African-American candidates and African-American political activists and community activists are going to have to understand that and begin to deal with that. Thank you, man. We appreciate you, man. God bless you. Go ahead.
I'll be quick with this on the Dr. Joe Boy race. Hmm. And Moreno won every precinct in that particular race.
Yeah,
just
and
about.
The black folks did not turn out to vote for this man. And the crossover vote that went to Moreno, all these politicians, Morrell, Karen Carden Peterson, and I hate to say this, even Troy Carter, leave your black card in the mailbox at WBOK, and all you black folks who know better, leave your back card at WBOK.
Thank you.
It's a shame. Alva, I know the lines are lit up, but extend this show for another day if you can.
We will. Thank you. I think the Joe Bowie race, it was where African-American leaders basically legitimized Helena Moreno.
Sure.
But there was also something interesting I saw due to Channel 4 debate and stuff, where the moderator refused to call Dr. Bowie Dr. Bowie.
Sure. Right, Mr. Bowie. Right,
you,
correct.
You kept calling him. Now, in other races where I've seen doctor, they've used the term doctor.
Absolutely.
In that race, they refused to call him Dr. Bowie.
Now, Dr. Bowie did win his district. He did win parts of New Orleans East. So he did win some precincts. Oella did say that Helena Moreno won everything.
But African-American leadership basically legitimized Helena Moreno, and they said, this is our person. And that was the one race where I think endorsements actually work.
Yes.
And money. Endorsements and money.
Money and endorsements.
Right. Line two, Tony, you're on with Jeff Thomas and OT.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
I can't tell you how heavy my heart is today for what has happened over the weekend. The Black Confederates, they, you know, they were called Karen Carter Peterson and her group, Guard Carter, even Dale Atkins, and Cynthia Hicks Morrell, all that group of people that think they're safe in their offices, they've been there for years, and they just let this city down, and they have given the council back to the white people, because already you got three whites in there, and you're going to lose District B and District D. I'm going to tell you that right now. The mayor who comes up is going to have a hard time having their thing, and I'm glad for the two ladies, but the mayor is going to have a hard time with the white council that these Confederate blacks in this city have given over to the white people again. The white
Thank you, Tony.
Taking the city back.
Thank you, Tony. Powerful statement, man. Appreciate it. God bless.
He brought it real, didn't he? it's making me think.
Yeah, well, right now, Confederate blacks are rule. They're the dominant class.
What does that mean, Confederate
black? Well, Tony coined that phrase a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
He said Confederate African-Americans are those that anti-African-American agenda, and basically they do the bidding. They're the overseers and the trustees.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I like that.
Tony, I've taken this phrase already in some speeches. But the Confederate blacks right now, they're pretty much ruling, mixed with white money. They're actually controlling they're on Easy Street right now.
And they help determine what happens in the mayor's race.
Line one, Shedrick, you're on with OT and Jeff Thomas.
Good morning. I'm not gonna lie, man. I'm very disheartened. Congratulations to Miss Moreno, because that's not where my beef ever was.
Mm-hmm.
My beef was with the brother I got to mention with these black politicians, man. Mm-hmm. And I pray that the voters will come out and vote, and I'm disappointed with the turnout, but we still have a chance to beat the political machine if we support Derek Edwards, with state treasurer, and now LaToya Cantrell, because she is not a part necessarily of that political machine that's killing our community.
Well, we were going to get to Derek Edwards, Brother Cedric, but it's going to be, given the fact that the Democratic Party and those Democratic leaders actually supported Republicans,
right,
it's going to be, and I don't understand how that happened.
He's maximized his votes.
Yeah,
he's not going to
let me say,
votes in the runoff.
If Jeff and I were helping him with his campaign and messaging his campaign, there's a message that can give him a shot.
Sure.
But I don't know that his people are humble enough to deal with two lowly people
lowly. Thomas and Thomas.
Maxine Waters' office was very interested in knowing that their Congressional Black Caucus didn't support his equivalent
at
the state level.
The major Democrats in this town went with Republican Neil Reiser. Thank you. Look, that is the psychology of that, and the reason for that, along with the Bowie election, said a lot to me, not only about Confederate leadership, black leadership, but it also said to me about the black vote and black voters. And if it didn't tell many of the activists and those who call this show, and we have told them that, you know, you may think or feel a certain way, but there's a group of black voters who are so disconnected to what you think, especially the black experience,
Sure.
And that group is a lot larger than many of our conscious people think.
I think we see it in the results of Saturday's election.
Look, we got to take our break. And when we come back, we're going to finish walking down this road. And then we're going to spend the last 15, 10 minutes on the mayor's race. Jeff Thomas, first of all, thank you, man.
Thank you.
I actually think you were spot on in your concerns. Several months ago, we tried to talk about where we thought this election was headed.
Right.
I think specifically when you said incumbents were in trouble,
right.
who said that they thought they were on Easier Street?
They were wrong.
You were right.
Yeah.
We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird. And the entire WBOK listening audience. We're back. District D, Jared Brossett, not much to talk about
right,
there.
Right.
District E, we've touched on that a little bit. Most experts say that incumbents, an incumbent to have a chance in a runoff usually should, you want to get somewhere in the mid 40s.
Right.
High 40s.
Right.
James Grace, 36%, in for a battle.
Yeah, he's in trouble. I think that, right, when the majority of the electorate votes against you and you're an incumbent, then that spells trouble for you on the horizon. This was an interesting race, though. I have to say, James Gray won most of the districts. Below Michoud. Cindy Nguyen won most of the districts above Michoud and some of the wealthier subdivisions in New Orleans East. And so, and then I think you also had two other strong candidates, Alicia Plummer-Clemmons and Dawn Abed.
Right.
And unfortunately for Ms. Plummer-Clemmons, there is a contingent that is against her.
Also.
And so that vote didn't go. That vote actually went to James Gray. Dawn Hebert ran a strong campaign for a first-time candidate, but she didn't do a lot. And so I think, though, that what you're going to have is that James Gray versus Cindy Nguyen is going to be interesting dynamics, first-time Vietnamese-American in New Orleans, I guess, besides Mr. Kyle, is in the runoff. And I think it's going to be an interesting referendum on incumbency. It's going to be and this is something I want to talk about. You know, I think part of the reason that you have lower voter turnout is that our incumbents haven't delivered great things. We have had less than inspirational laws coming out of City Hall.
But let me tell you what I hear. Mm-hmm. I hear personality, accessibility, attitude, results.
Exactly.
And even if they haven't been resolved, because the best thing I heard about Helena Moreno from African Americans who was supporting her was that they say she's nice.
Right. Right.
Even if she didn't deliver anything.
Right.
They said she was nice.
Right. And so that goes to show you that what
many African American leaders are not nice. They act like they're kings and queens.
Well,
that's real talk.
You know, that's been a part of the problem with being elected in New Orleans. You know, you get everybody says, look, you don't see these politicians until it's election time. Yeah. Then they come and shaking your hands, they're loving you,
right.
And then after they get in office,
right.
you can't get a meeting with them. You don't see them anymore. And they aren't. Now, if they were doing that, but delivering results in the community, that might be different. But when you don't deliver results,
at least be nice.
Yeah, and you're inaccessible and not nice, then you get voted out of office.
Well, we're going back to the lines right now. And for our callers, please be, the lines are lit up, and we had to get through this segment. Line one, the great one, Reverend Calhoun. You're on with O.T. Jeff and Early Bird.
I don't know how we educate our people any better than we can to get them to understand what's going on. The first commercial that ran on WBOK, sponsored by the Say No Committee. Leslie Jacobs, Educate Now, sent a group down there to shut that commercial down. So you got to understand, these folks are taking your money to beat you with your money, to beat you to take your money. So I'm just trying to understand now. I had gotten calls as soon as the commercial ran, was to meet with the school board and everybody who was going to talk about the issues and the problems, which I don't think is going to happen now since that went on. But what my problem is, Oliver, People need to know who their enemies are. And I don't know how we educate people well enough to understand where the real problems are.
Thank you, Reverend Calhoun.
Yeah, you're right.
But I know how you can. That question can be answered, Reverend Calhoun. The question of how to educate people better is be accessible.
Right. Let them see results.
Let them see resources coming to their community.
That's right.
Be courteous.
That's right.
When people in neighborhood meetings and people confront you, it's not personal. Let them vent if they're frustrated about issues in their community. And don't let political brokers broker you. You deal with your constituents in the community and fight for issues. Let them see you publicly fighting for things, taking on the establishment for things that matter to them and their families. If black elected officials would do that, if black leaders for certain sectors would do that, then people would vote for them or support them.
Let me just say this. Let me give you an anecdote, Oliver. You may not know about this, but there was a time, there was this restaurant, the Ice House on Chef Mitchell Highway.
Absolutely.
There was this restaurant right next door. I was in there one day eating breakfast early in the morning, and in walks this city council at large guy. He was sitting in there. He was sitting. He was talking to everybody. People were offering to buy him lunch. Buy him his breakfast. He was eating his food. He was at the lunch counter, engaged with the community. He didn't have bodyguards around him. He was by himself eating breakfast.
What?
You know who that was?
No.
That was you. This was when you were elected. I mean, city council at large.
I had better do that, or my dad wouldn't vote for me.
Well, my point is that you were all talking about being accessible. You were a man of the people. People could put their hands on you, talk to you, reach you, and you delivered results. And so I think that's the motto that our elected officials need to understand.
I tell folk right now, I have relationships, and if I called African American leaders for a meeting right now,
You would get that meeting
eventually.
Yeah, but you're
eventually.
Right. But the average guy on the street is not going to get that meeting, and that's part of the problem.
Even a return call. I know a couple of African American elected officials right now. I've called for 2 weeks for something to help them,
right?
And they haven't returned.
They haven't returned a call yet.
Line two, Ms. Jones.
Yes,
you're on with Jeff Thomas.
Oh, good morning, Joel. I'm disappointed. I want to make three quick points going back to the campaign and with the lady. In a district with Alicia Plummer, and she brought up the fact that she had Lakeshore Drive open to anybody to drive through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, didn't that come through with a Sherman Copeland's bill?
Yeah.
And Alicia Plummer and this other lady claimed it, who was a candidate. Okay.
Absolutely.
That was not the truth, but y'all wouldn't let me say it. Okay, and the word nice, in the etymology, nice one time meant stupid. Look it up.
Hmm.
It meant stupid. Looking at the origin of words, you could go online. Okay, another thing, technology. You could flip the coin and everything. Suppose Dr. Bowie really had the higher numbers. Those computers can do wonders. You can do wonders with them. You know me, I'm the conspiracy theorist.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. God bless you. We appreciate you.
Don't shut me off that quick.
No, we're just trying to move on. We got like a couple more races to get to, but go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, but it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So black folks, black folks are not nice. Helena Moreno saying you're nice. Mm-hmm. So she's saying you're stupid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Jones, thank you. God bless you. We appreciate you. There are a whole lot of factors that go into what happens. And let me say this. Accessibility, being engaged in your community,
mm-hmm.
Those things matter.
Mm-hmm.
When you see African American voters, that many of them are speaking by not voting.
That's the biggest thing. You hit on it to me. For me, everything that we said today is true. But the biggest thing is that we have this uninspired electorate because I don't believe we have an inspiring group of elected officials. Mm-hmm. The fact is, our elected officials are not bringing forth meaningful legislation. They're not transforming the lives of people. And until people's lives are transformed, people are not going to be engaged more in the political process. Now, you often say that people, elected officials, are managing the electorate because they want to maintain being in office.
Right.
And so if that's true, then that's to our detriment. And so I think that what we're seeing is a backlash against that, which is why people are not going out to vote, and which is why people are voting against incumbents. commitment to and not delivering to the community.
Yeah, I think that time has run its course, too. I think you're absolutely right. That's a whole other topic. That's right. A very good analysis, though. Line three, Miss Eloise, you're on with Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, y'all.
Good morning.
And I'm not going to take a long time,
yes, ma'am.
But I always tell these candidates, mind who your campaign manager are.
Uh-uh.
Because they can destroy you.
Uh-uh. Who are you talking about, Miss Eloise? Are you talking about the West Bank?
Yes. The West Bank. The worst bank, as we say, the best bank. The worst bank when it comes to leadership.
Mm.
People that have been sit there for quite some time and still haven't comprehend is the people that you need, you're abusing. You know, I kind of led the cutoff this week for Nadine. Thought she was going to be that person that going to work with the people for changes. But her campaign manager was the worst that I ever seen in my life.
Well, I heard,
you know?
I heard.
Who was
complaints.
Her campaign manager?
I heard complaints.
And we didn't want Jackie Clausen to still be sitting because last week they had a write-up in the paper where she done already put things in place. What she gonna do to us? You know, we got to rebuild Bricktail Park, which was never a black person thing. They took the Ponderosa from the people and made Bricktail Park from, you know. So we Berman Stadium, that's their pet peeve. They ain't going to do nothing nowhere else until you get a person who concerned about the ills and the uglies in the community.
Wow, thank you, Miss Eloise. That's a great way to end that segment. Thank you very much. God bless you. Miss Eloise says we need people who show concern. Simple.
Right. If it's
hard to get resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're really not the best policymaker, mm-hmm. the least you can be is listen mm-hmm. and show concern and be accessible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. I saw signs over, you know, I live on the West Bank in Algiers. I like to say that, especially when the water is bad on the East Bank. But I saw signs on the West Bank that said Nadine's potholes. And to me, that talked about the fact that people in Algiers felt that she wasn't responsive, that she didn't deliver the goods. And I'm kind of repeating myself, but I just want to make it plain and clear to everybody who's here, who's listening, especially if you're an incumbent, if you want to win, people have to understand that you represent them and that you're delivering into their districts. And if you don't, then you're going to get voted out of office.
Let's get to this mayor's race.
The mayor's race.
Well, there we go. I'm looking at the map. LaToya Cantrell, underfunded mm-hmm. As a candidate. Beck Narrison, mm-hmm. Charbonnet had most of the money. Mm-hmm. Her campaign was slow, steady.
Mm-hmm.
Cantrell in the 7th Ward,
mm-hmm.
and the amount of vote that she got in New Orleans East,
mm-hmm.
It says a lot going into a runoff.
Well, let me tell you, you know, if people go to Think 504, we have an article on Think 504, which does an analysis of the mayor's race and mm-hmm. talks about the fact that, well, this is the most surprising thing about the mayor's race. Not that you had two ladies.
Women, no.
But that Cantrell ran first and Desiree Charbonnet ran second.
And it was a distant second. If you think about all of the analysis, all of the early polling,
yes.
It was a distant second.
Yes. All, you know, after she announced, Desiree Charbonnet immediately became the front runner. By far. I mean, she was polling.
Raised $500,000 in a day.
Right. She had $1.5 million to spend. She was polling 35% to 40%. Throughout the campaign. I mean, the entire mm-hmm. campaign. LaToya Cantrell had always been in the middle consistently, mm-hmm. 20 to 25%. Mm-hmm. Mike Bagnaris was in the teens, 13% to 19%. That was consistent throughout the entire mayor's race until at the end, the negative campaigning that went against
Voice Pack, the Not For Sale NOLA.
Yeah.
Voice of the People. Exactly
right. And so what you had, though, so that is, this has completely transformed mm-hmm. the mayor's race because you thought going in that you could have predicted a Desiree Charbonnet win. Now, in this runoff, you know, there's a new election and there are all kinds of new things that are going to happen that we can't predict right mm-hmm. now. But the path to victory for Desiree Charbonnet seems much more difficult than it did prior to Saturday night.
Jeff, let's talk about that, because early tracking polling, immediately when Ms. Charbonnet got into the race, one of the nicest people you ever want to meet.
Absolutely.
When she got into the race, immediately she led in basically every category. Even though white voters didn't even know who she was.
Right, that's right.
She looked nice. She's very presentable. She had a name that they knew.
Right.
Every tracking poll that I saw was she was leading in white voters.
Right.
That disappeared election day.
She lost the white support, and it can be directly tied to the Sidney Torres voice pack commercials and the Not For Sale NOLA. Those two things destroyed her white support.
But
and
she also lost some black support. If you look at what happened with the black voters that you thought would be an automatic, especially in key districts where family matters, that's 7th Ward, 9th Ward.
Right.
Those voters peeled off, too.
Right.
How does she get them back, or how does Cantrell continue to broaden her base? I said the other day, talking to a group, that Cantrell had the most broad-based campaign, LGBTQ, feminists.
Absolutely.
Women.
Absolutely.
Fringe groups.
Absolutely.
She had more groups that are single-issue groups involved in her campaign than any other campaign.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think you're right that LaToya Cantrell's base is broad. I mean, you just described it well, mm-hmm. black, white, rich, poor.
And she was able to go through the campaign being anti-system, even though she was part of the system.
Yes, she is a formidable candidate. She's certainly the front runner in going mm-hmm. into the runoff. And I think Desiree Charbonnet is some of the points she's going to have to talk about is the fact that she is from New Orleans. Cantrell is not from New Orleans. They're going to have to go negative against her, maybe against her husband, some of the things that happened with him in the past, if those things are meaningful, if there's any dirt that they can find. Also, you know, she kind of flip-flopped on a few important issues like mm-hmm. the monuments. She flip-flopped. And more importantly, I don't know that there's any real meaningful legislation that we can point to that LaToya Cantrell has brought besides the non-smoking ban.
But in that case, I predict it's going to be a knockdown drag out. Potentially, it could be a close election, especially given the fact that people are opting out.
Mm-hmm.
Many mm-hmm. folk who voted for fringe candidates, mm-hmm. a few thousand votes is going to matter this election.
Absolutely.
So Michael Begnaris is sitting in the catbird seat. Even though Troy Henry only finished with 7%, this could be an election where a few thousand votes matters.
Yeah,
Where do you think they go?
Well, the endorsements, I think this. I don't see how Begnaris can endorse Charbonnet. Mm-hmm. It's going to be difficult given how negative he went against her, you know, against the Blair and Ike thing, given the fact that he called her corrupt, given the fact that he mm-hmm. called her incompetent, those things, given the fact that he said the only good thing he could say about her is that she had nice shoes.
Wow.
And so I don't know how you go from that position to an endorsement. So it's easier for me to see him endorsing mm-hmm. Cantrell. And then also his base, which has been, I mean, he got a huge support, white support.
But it didn't translate. Cantrell pretty much stole that vote from election
day. His negative campaigning helped Cantrell.
Not himself.
Not at all, right. His support has always been the white community and a small slice of the black community. But I think his endorsement is going to go to Cantrell, which I think his voters are going to go there.
One other very important point that you and I talked about last week was that the contention from many Begnaris people that Troy Henry's campaign hurt their campaign. We see that wasn't the case now.
No, right. That's right.
It was really about his own campaign. But it's also another major message to those major white political brokers
mm-hmm.
and business people they could not even influence that white voter throughout much of those heavily white precincts.
That's right.
They made choices separate from who they recommended.
Exactly right.
Except for Moreno.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting mayoral campaign. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting next 30 days. There are going to be some things that are going to come out that we are not aware of. Desiree Charbonnet is going to have to go negative. Is Sidney Torres going to continue to beat her up? Is not for sale NOLA? We can expect that they're going to be there, but mm-hmm. we don't know that Sidney Torres now, when there are only two candidates, when he's supposed to be the voice of the people mm-hmm. and supposed to be independent and nonpartisan, if he comes out against Desiree Charbonnet, that kind of makes him a little hypocritical.
And where's the mayor going to be? It was always said that the mayor's people were in Charbonnet's campaign, especially a lot of the people who worked for him.
Sure.
So what does he do now that it looks like Cantrell is the threat to his legacy. Well, I don't want to say the threat to his, whatever that legacy is, but she's the leading contender right now. And she's the, other than Spurlock and Henry, she fancied herself as the anti-Mitch.
Exactly right. So Charbonnet is going to need a big white support. Obviously, which is why she had the DA up there, which was an interesting, given the fights between,
That didn't help her in those white precincts.
No, it didn't help her much at all. She's going to have to pull out some white elected officials who are going to support her. Mm-hmm. She's going to have to broaden her.
Well, they have most of the political. I actually think in many cases that if you look at the candidates who, other than Helena Moreno, who had all the political endorsements, those candidates did not fare well this time. You and I talked before that. Tiffany Chase, we thought, if she had ran a campaign with her voice and her image and her story the first time, she would have run. This time she came back with her story, her voice, and her image.
And she did.
And she won.
That's right. Exactly right. She ran a great campaign this time against a qualified Tracy Dale.
Who had a lot of endorsements.
Who had a lot of and money. And that was that was one of, that's the kind of race that I like to see in New Orleans. When you have two qualified candidates going at it, not necessarily going negative. And if they do go negative, it's not personal attacks. And you can go negative on a person's record. I don't have an issue with
that. Jeff, before we move on, and I want to stick with this. Are these candidates relying on endorsements too much? And I think given Helena Moreno, because Helena Moreno, it was the perfect storm.
Sure.
Everything came together for her, right?
Sure. Money, resources, endorsements.
But in these other campaigns where people are touting their endorsements, I've been contending for quite some time. People want to hear from you.
Exactly.
They want to connect with you.
That's how you get elected. You get elected by engaging with people. You get elected by selling your story, your vision to people. People don't vote for endorsements. People don't vote for what other people recommend. People vote for who they can connect to. And that's going to be why what either of these two ladies are going to have to do. And that's going to be the difference going forward.
And messaging.
And messaging, of course.
And messaging.
It's critical. But your message is you. Your message is, this is what I believe. I believe that New Orleans should be whatever that is that that person believes. And we need to lay it out, and we need to hear directly from these candidates. And we're going to, both of them are going to have money. Both of them are going to be well-run organizations and campaigns. And it's going to be a great 30 days, and it's going to be great for the city of New Orleans. I mean, we have two good qualified candidates.
Other than Helena Moreno, who's on just about everybody's ballot, the ballot candidates did not fare well.
Well, listen, that's the changing demographics. That's the changing way.
Cantrell was on
campaigns or
one bowl to bowl.
Yeah, right.
The bowl
exactly
ballot.
Right. Yeah, listen, I don't think these ballots matter much anymore. We're in the age of social media. We're in the age of a time when the internet is proliferating, when people's phones give them information up to the minute, when the email can pop in your box, and as opposed to back in the day when people waited for mail to come in. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, I don't even get mail on the West Bank. That's a big issue. I got to tell you. Mail delivery on the West Bank
has been a problem, though.
And
I don't know what's going on, but people have been complaining about it.
This is horrible. I get checks in the mail, and that they are not coming.
The check is in the mail.
Yeah, well, listen, that means nothing to me, I got to tell you, because I need to go pick it up. Look, just write me another one, because that's gone forever.
Your check is in the mail.
Right. But, you know, I need an elected official who can make sure that I get my check in the mail. Exactly right. So who can determine that? I don't know. I'm rambling. But the point that I really want to make is this. I think that the times when endorsements were important, when you know, Leon Canizero could come up and say, vote for her because I say so, and I don't think that matters anymore. People now are more engaged with social media. Candidates can now touch each individual life. There's so many more methods to reach people.
Then
in the last
couple of minutes, I think it's going to be a fun campaign to watch. For us.
I'm looking forward to it.
Actually, maybe finally real campaign season's going to start.
Right. Exactly right.
Any predictions in the mayor's race?
You know,
or are we going to watch it play out?
I'm going to watch it play out. I'll say this, that LaToya Cantrell is the front runner. That Desiree
Charbonnet. It's her to lose.
It's her race to lose. That Desiree Charbonnet has a lot of ground to make up. She's got to overcome a bunch of negatives. She's got to overcome forces that are seeking to destroy her candidacy.
Is it possible for her to be a martyr?
I don't know that you can be a victim. I think she's got to be the strong woman. She's got to be the strong leader. Her messaging has got to be, listen, these forces are out here conspiring against me. They're lying. They're doing whatever. But I am the reason. I am the person you should
vote
for.
Can she separate herself from this political dominance or this major political power group that she's associated with?
I think that's going to be her key to victory.
I think she can, with the right message.
That's going to be the key to her being victorious. If she can say, listen, forget
that's
about
if,
these
that's
people
if, that's
around
if they're
me.
Smart enough to develop the message.
Right, and maybe they're listening and maybe they will. But
probably not.
Listen, let me tell you, if they don't, then they're going to lose. And the fact is, the baggage around her is like an albatross, and it's going to be difficult for her to overcome. But she can overcome
it. Cantrell's campaign group savvy enough to know just how far to go and whether they can distance themselves from some of this negative packs.
They have been able to.
They've been studied.
They have been able to ride the wave of that criticism. They have been the beneficiaries of all of this negative campaigning against Desiree Charbonnet, and they haven't participated in it at all. They've been the unintended consequence has been the pushing up of LaToya Cantrell's election results. And so now, though, when it's just these two, people are going to say, well, Ms. Cantrell, what do you have to say about these negative ads? And so how she responds to that, her response is going to be critical to what people view. And so if she responds in a way that she's able to distance herself completely from the Not For Sale and the Sidney Torreses, then she will, not be tied to that negative campaigning. Mm-hmm. Is she going to go negative? We don't know. I mean, I'm sure she's going to have to because I believe Desiree Charbonnet is going to have to go negative against Ms. Cantrell to beat into that lead and to bring some white vote her way. If you look at the election results, Desiree Charbonnet took over the New Orleans East, took over the West Bank. She won parts of Lakeview. She won most of Gentilly. Ms. Cantrell won all of
Uptown
Mid-City. Uptown,
dominated Uptown. And major and parts of the Seven Ward.
And some parts of the Seven Ward. And some parts of the East. I mean, she won in the East, too. So this is they were only separated by about 7,000 votes. And so it's going to be a tight race going forward. It's going to be about turnout. It's going to be about endorsements. It's going to be about messaging. And so it's going to be interesting to watch. And from Think 504's perspective, we'll be offering our opinions.
And before you go, another thing that was just interesting to me was that beating up on Mitch Landrieu, what didn't seem to be working either.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That wasn't the formula.
Right.
Folk want to know what you are going to do.
Yeah, the issues are sewage and water board infrastructure. The issues are crime. The issues are economic development.
Didn't work for McNair's. Didn't work for Henry.
Right.
It didn't work for anybody. Towards the end of the campaign, Charbonnet started to take on the administration.
That's right.
Look, voters want to connect with you. I guess it gets back to what you said.
Exactly right. It's up to people to get their messages out. And so, the good news is that, there are many more ways besides the news, TV, radio, and direct mail. This internet makes people more easily accessible.
Any predictions for District E?
District E is going to come down to messaging. If James Gray is able to get his story told, if Cindy Nguyen
he's got to peel off some of that 64%.
Yeah, and if Cindy Nguyen is able to galvanize, I'm not certain that Cindy is going to be able to pull in as many black people as she thinks she can. That's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting dynamic out in New Orleans East. If a Vietnamese American can
black
pull
voters,
in African Americans,
black voters seem ready to vote for who they can connect with. They're not voting race.
James Gray's got to prove that he is going to deliver the goods to New Orleans
and
East.
He's got
to
get some Vietnamese vote.
That's going to be hard to do. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that.
This is OT and Jeff Thomas, man. You promise to come back in a couple weeks?
Absolutely, positively. Thanks for having me this morning.
Thank you so much, man. You had me out here early in the morning,
6:30 in the morning, man. I'm still just drinking my coffee.
You in the early bird. God bless you. We appreciate all you do to educate the public on all of these subjects. They matter. You've made a major difference, and we look forward to analyzing this race in the future.
Thank you. When we come back, everyone who's calling,
we're gonna have our political scientist. So if you didn't get a chance to call in during this segment, you can call back when Dr. Clark and Dr. Amity get on. This is gonna be, Lord, I can't wait to hear from George Amity. Oh my goodness. I call them thunder and lightning. Dr. Clark is kind of like the quiet rumble of the thunder, and then Amity comes with the lightning. We'll be back after the break.
I'll be listening.